What happened the other night? Do you want me to tell you?
Yes.
You died.
What? I didn't die. I mean, look at me. I'm right here.
You died. But you were reborn.
Oh, you're crazy. You are crazy, Cat Lady.
Midnight knew your fate. That's why she tested you. To see if you were worthy of a gift she could give you. A gift that could change your life. And give you a new one.
Welcome to this review of Catwoman, part of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, DC/Batman Retrospective.
It's overtime.
Join Garrett.
If you don't have an identity, why keep it a secret?
Matt.
I think this is a total waste of time.
And Adam.
We're gonna get through this together, okay?
As they dissect the notorious Halle Berry starring adventure.
We owe it to the women of this country.
A reminder to keep coming back as the boys will go through the DC Cinematic Universe one movie at a time.
Oh, man, we got a lot of work to do.
So sit back, pour yourself a bowl of milk.
What are you, stuck?
Percolated Media's review of Catwoman begins meow.
I'm on my way.
Put your thinking caps on. It's time to talk Catwoman. Released July 23rd, 2004. Budget was $100 million. Box office, $82.1 million. Ouch. And this might be part of the reason why it flopped. It's directed by Pitoff. Who the hell's Pitoff? What the hell are we watching? That is what we're going to be discussing today. And Matt, you know, if we thought last week's movie was notorious, let's talk some Catwoman.
Do we have to?
What were you thinking the first time you put Catwoman on? And not just for this. Was it just for this review or no?
No, I saw this in the theater when I was an 11-year-old boy.
I think
this was the movie that, you know, when you're a kid, you really have no differentiation between what you consider good and what you consider bad on a critical level. I think this was one of the first movies I remember walking out of saying, that just sucked. And I don't know if this because I was... you know, I was, God, like 10 or 11 when this came out, so maybe this is the moment, like, I think I might be gay, because Halle Berry in this outfit just is not doing anything for me. I'm more interested in the fashion design and the inner workings of the bad business of modeling. And where the fuck is Batman? That was my question. And I'm sure that was the question of every other DC comic enthusiast who walked into this movie with a movie titled Catwoman. Just going off of that, you would expect to see Batman, but for plenty of reasons we're going to talk about, this movie has literally 9 lives of production hell, among plenty of other things. So all in all, this was my second time watching it, and probably going to be my last time, to be perfectly honest. And this is one of those recordings where being partnered with someone who is a completionist is a burden, but it's also a gift, much like the cat powers that she receives in this movie. Because when you say we're doing the Batman retrospective, you would think that would be exclusively movies that have Batman featured in it. But this breaks that magical rule. But just why? That's my question. I feel like Chris Christopherson. Well, I should be singing "Why Me, Lord? What Did I Ever Do?"
Well, here's the thing, and you make a point that Vince made to me for years when I would try doing stuff like this, and they were like, "Well, it's not part of it." I'm like, "Well, it kind of is because it is under the DC banner," and I realize there's no Batman in this, but the production history of this, it was originally supposed to have Michelle Pfeiffer in it, who was in a Batman movie. And by the way, Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman is in this. If you look, when she goes and visits Ophelia, the picture of Catwoman from that movie is on her wall. So this is part of the universe. And we'll discuss through many, many rewrites and many, many scripts how that didn't happen. But yes, this is the Supergirl, I guess we could say, of this franchise. The 1984 Supergirl, where it's a part of the universe, but people just don't want to admit that it exists. Adam, this was a first time viewing for you, correct?
Yes, it was.
Okay, and you had obviously heard the notoriousness behind this movie. You have the, you know, bunch of comics page, and you've been a comic book guy for so long. You must have heard about the notoriety of this.
Oh, I was just completely unavailable because I knew that this was an award-winning film. Now, that award was a Golden Raspberry, but yeah, there was, you know what, even when the marketing and stuff came out and they were selling the look and all that, I still wasn't into what this movie was. But its reputation preceded it fucking by a cat's length of tail, because, yeah, I mean, oof, you could not have marketed the stink off of this movie from what people were saying well before its release.
The film received 7 Golden Raspberry nominations, and it won in the categories of Worst Picture, Worst Actress, which we'll talk about, Worst Director, and Worst Screenplay. So it definitely hit a spot with people. Critics hated it. I did go to theaters and see it. It was not received well even at that screening. I went like the day before it opened. Crowd who was ready for something, and they came out thinking it was something else. So production history of this. Let's talk about this. So 1992, Batman Returns comes out and is not really well received, as we talked about, but it was positively looked at because of Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman performance. People came out saying that was a pretty good Catwoman. They wanted to get this going. And so Daniel Waters, our friend Daniel Waters from the Batman Returns script, he did write a draft, took place in Vegas, and Burton was attached to direct this. Michelle Pfeiffer was game. She was wanting to do it. And it just went through draft after draft after draft until finally Burton wasn't too keen on doing it. I think it was around the time Batman Forever rolled around. He's like, yeah, I'm good. And then Michelle Pfeiffer, she was willing to play ball for a while. And then around the mid to late 90s, she stopped saying in interviews that she was up for it.
Before the end of that time, too, Tim Burton would start working on and get fired off of the Superman film as well.
Yeah, and that put a damper on the proceedings as well. Even at that time, it was like, okay, the script is there. And honestly, I did read that script. I read it for this retrospective. And I got to say, it's not much better than the movie we got. I'm a fan of Daniel Waters and his satire and the way he writes stuff. And a lot of stuff in Batman Returns is just, you know, we mentioned in that podcast, it is not very good. But some of the satire, some of the, like, the holy shit lines, that was a lot of Daniel Waters stuff. And I think he tried doing a whole script of that, and it just did not work. So who knows what would have been better than what we got? I don't think so. So that script rolled around. It stopped. Then they were like, okay, we got another script. Let's get Ashley Judd, since Michelle Pfeiffer's not going to play with us anymore. We're going to get Ashley Judd here. And Ashley Judd, she was a woman of the moment. She was doing a lot of stupid thrillers with Morgan Freeman around that time. At first she was going to go, and she's like, no, I'm done. Then they looked at Nicole Kidman, and Nicole Kidman backed out relatively quick. So this one over, let's see, we had Alexander, we had Super Babies, we had Surviving Christmas, and we had White Chicks.
Oh my God,
so, Alexander.
That is an Infinity Gauntlet of shit.
I tell you, 2004, not necessarily a great year for film.
We do have to say this. 2004 was a banner year just for quantity of superhero movies. And what I will say is that I miss the days where you had superhero films that each felt distinctive. I think one of the problems with Marvel being as popular as it's become is I think it has removed in certain people's minds the idea of different approaches. It seems like a lot of people just like the Marvel style and don't really gravitate towards anything else. When you look at 2004, you had some bad ones like, you know, Blade Trinity, you have the Thomas Jane Punisher. You have a little movie called Spider-Man 2 that came out right before Catwoman, or maybe right after. It was around the same time. And it's amazing to me that we had both the most critically acclaimed superhero movie at that point, still widely regarded as one of the best, simultaneously released was something that was considered maybe the worst superhero movie of all time. But I missed the days where all the different studios were taking big swings.
Mm-hmm.
You had a lot of stuff going on. Like, this tried to appeal to a female demographic. Not sure how well they succeeded. You had Spider-Man 2, which was very, you know, it was for the whole family. And you got some harder stuff. Like, you got Blade Trinity was the verge of sci-fi horror. You had the Thomas Jane Punisher, which just is a dumpster fire of a movie, which I can't wait to talk about when we do the Punisher series. I both miss the days where we had all these varied superhero movies, but it also makes you realize how far the genre has evolved in the near 20 years since this came out.
And then, I mean, on top of that, we had Hellboy come out that same year. That's right.
The initial one, we had the best Fantastic Four movie ever made, and The Incredibles came out that year.
I'm glad you finished that sentence.
Van Helsing. So yeah, it's God, that is an interesting year from start to end. You ain't kidding.
Yeah, and let's also talk about, too, boys, that not only did we have superheroes coming out left and right, we had female empowering movies coming out. Like mm-hmm. Tomb Raider started the whole, let's get an Oscar winner in the mold of an action star and put her in the midst of an action movie. We had Elektra, which, God, I cannot wait to talk about that movie.
Trust me, I will lock myself in a freezer so I don't have to talk about that movie.
Oh, man, I can't wait to talk about that movie. We had Aeon Flux, starring another Oscar winner, Charlize Theron. Like, these movies were coming out left and right.
You even had, like, not necessarily Oscar winners, but you had the Underworld franchise that started around this time.
Mm-hmm.
You had the Resident Evil franchise started. So I appreciate at the time that women could carry their own big franchises, because say what you want about the quality of those movies, some of them I like more than others, but those movies made money, and they had to keep justifying all those sequels. So even as bad as some of them are, and holy shit, some of those Underworld movies are almost unwatchable.
Yeah.
But I appreciate that 20 years ago, it seems like women had more franchises to their own that were action franchises than they do now. And the only ones I can think of now are stuff that's tied almost entirely to superheroes.
Yep.
Halle Berry. Let's talk about her. She had just won an Oscar. We talked about her when we did Die Another Day, the character in that, Jinx.
And X-Men. So this is her third appearance on this retrospective,
yes.
Which equates to three strikes and you're out as far as her performances. Because I like those X-Men movies, some of them at least. You have to go back and listen to those shows. I thought she was one of the worst parts of Dying of the Day, and then she followed it up with this.
Well, she was an Oscar winner, and she was kind of upset that, you know, the movie that they were going to do based on her character, Jinx, they're going to do an offshoot of Bond with Jinx. That fell through. And so she took this role on. I guess she was just starving to star in an action film, you know. It's kind of funny that she becomes very well respected with an Oscar, and all of a sudden, this is the movie she takes. She notoriously took this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Say what you want. She owned it.
Absolutely she did, yeah. And in fact, if you watch that Raspberry speech, it's phenomenal. And I'm not a Halle Berry fan. I've mentioned on the X-Men shows, I do not like her acting. I actually did meet her one time, and she was not a very nice person. This was 22 years ago, so I do not find anything about her really enlightening. But when she goes up and then she gives that speech and she thanks her agent, she brings her agent up on the stage. And says, you know, didn't you read the script? She was very, very, very funny in that speech. And Adam, you just watched that speech for the first time too, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I think she was coked up as much as she, allegedly coked up as much as she was, as, you know, doing a hit and run. But it's fucking phenomenal to sit and watch. There's no doubt.
All right. So is this movie the catastrophe it's made out to be? Let's find out, boys.
Is sky blue? Are cats assholes? The answer to both those questions are yes, by the way. So
we start off with some credits that, okay, what exactly are we saying here with these credits? This is the history of the Catwoman curse?
You are saying, hey, all you Batman fans, you're not going to like the next 100 minutes or so. This, to me, is the calling card of taking a character in name only, which I did accuse Tim Burton of doing in Batman Returns, more so with the Penguin and literalizing them. This takes that to the nth degree, where if it was not called Catwoman, would have no association or identifying marks with the character that's been established in DC Comics all these years. And these credits, I will say something nice, because I could probably count on one hand the amount of good things I'll say about this movie. They're at least openly embracing the supernatural, which Batman Returns didn't do. It was just the cats show up and she gets resurrected. Here they're tying into Egyptian mythology, which is rooted in cats. If you look at pyramids and hieroglyphs, cats were worshipped, which is amazing because cats don't really deserve it, in my humble opinion. Because, yeah, you know, this movie is the worst thing to happen to cats since dogs. Although, I like that they're at least taking an openly mythological component to Catwoman. In the same way that some people view Batman as, like Tim Burton viewed Batman as more myth than anything else. So they stuck to a lane, but it's quite the detour from almost 80 years of history with this character.
Well,
we talked about how the fact that there were so many writers attached to this, and one of them, I read an interview with him a number of years ago where he was saying that he wanted to tell a good Catwoman story, but when he went to that meeting, executive pushed to say, look, we want to talk about how Michelle Pfeiffer was resurrected by those cats in that movie. We need to have an explanation of that. That's what people are wanting to see. And so he didn't want to do it, but he's the one who came up with this whole Egyptian pyramid scheme. And right away, you're like, what the fuck are we watching?
Just use the words Egyptian pyramid scheme.
Because the storyline's a scheme.
So I don't know who, when they were sitting around the desk in the boardroom, persuaded them to go with this script. But it was clear to me they were up against a wall, and it seems like they just went into the litter box and pulled out a spec script that they had, rewrote a few lines here and there, and that's what this is. Because as Matt said, this open, and I kind of, you know, the opening sequence, the title, I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool for a movie that's not Catwoman. You know, I would be into this. But it's clear right away that what the fuck is going on, because it has no ties to Batman or to anything else. But, you know, some movies, especially in a franchise, in a series, you can tell when they brought in a spec script just to get something done because they couldn't write a movie. And that's exactly what this feels like to me. As a cat person and a Batman fan, this starts this movie off with a catastrophe right here, right off the bat, because it just lets me know that this is tied to nothing. And maybe that should have been an opportunity to do something creative, but instead they just dig this into the sand right away.
Well, let's talk about Catwoman a little bit, the character, because, you know, we didn't really get into this with Batman Returns, and I wanted to kind of save it for this conversation, just as a reference to what we're seeing in this. Putting this aside, what exactly did that character consist of, boys?
She's a cat burglar. She's a thief that Batman has been chasing since the earliest times. She's been on the side of right. She's been on the side of villainy. She's a simple cat burglar that sometimes is an anti-hero, sometimes not. There's a beautiful issue that came out a few years ago, Batman 50, that traversed their entire history. But she's never been supernatural this way. She's never been mystical or magical or anything having to do with what Tim Burton did, more or less what this movie did.
Yeah, she has always been someone that does not possess any, much like Batman, she doesn't have any supernatural abilities. But she's very competent at what she does as a thief. Yep. They've had one of the great on-again, off-again relationships in all of comics, because Batman always tries to fully have her cross the tightrope to the side of good. But she's as elusive as her namesake. It's one of the great romances that is never destined to work. But they've never, and this is one of the things I've loved so much about the characters, that they've never nuked her or fringed her or shoved her aside for the sake of Batman exclusively. She's always been her own person. And she's, yeah, much like Batman, been done very well in almost every form of media. Unfortunately, this movie is the outlier, but it begs the question, looking at this as a spinoff or possibly a spec script, were they forbidden from using the Selina Kyle name or setting this in Gotham City? Because to me, that's what it feels like, that they gave her a new name, a new backstory, an unnamed city. This could be Milwaukee, Wisconsin, for all you know. And it feels like they were legally sort of like a Kevin McClory situation where they couldn't, yeah, use anything tied to the Batman mythos. Was that, Garrett, and I don't know this for a fact, are you aware of any of those circumstances?
There's no circumstance like that, because this does have a DC moniker to it. It is in the DC universe, in the cinematic universe. I don't think there were any restrictions on them. I literally think that later on, writers started coming in, and they wanted to make this its own piece. Now, I was going to ask you guys, are there offshoots of Catwoman? Like, do we ever see Patience in the comics at all? It feels like one of those things where we have a pupil or something of Selina Kyle, but there's no evidence at all of Patience or anything like that. Adam?
No, there hasn't been. I know, I think there's a few comics, like one of her young roommates takes her gear and is out there pretending to be Catwoman, but even that's not Patience. No, it's been one of the characters in the comics that is Selina Kyle is Catwoman, period.
Yep.
You know, I can at least say as Batman, you know, other characters have donned the cape and cowl, you know, a couple of them at this point, but Catwoman is Selina Kyle, period, in a sentence. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a Robin situation where multitudes of characters. I think Holly Robinson is the only other Catwoman I can think of.
Yeah, that's what it was, yeah.
She took over when Catwoman became Mother, but it's ironic that the character was written by Frank Miller because it's only one of the positive portrayals of women that he's actually written. But you're right, the Patience Phillips identity is exclusive to this movie. It's kind of, it took the Jack Napier approach where we're gonna give this character an entirely new alias. But by doing so, you're removing this character entirely from their history. And by doing so, they don't resemble the character at all. And I'm all for changing. You can change as much as you want, but there's certain base marks you have to get to still call yourself that character. And I don't feel like this portrayal and this characterization are a proper depiction of Catwoman as she's presented in both the comics and other forms of media around this time.
So we're getting pics of rituals in China, updates on new breeds, stolen claw necklaces, and then we're hearing about Egyptian curses and pyramids. Patience starts off her cat's tale by saying, it starts off the day that she died.
Oh, all that comes me.
Later. Oh, okay, I gotta step in, because this drives me nuts. We always talk about how, you know, in the superhero movie genre in particular, it rides trends.
Uh-huh.
Batman 89, there were a lot of movies that tried to copy that. I think of Dick Tracy to an extent, Shadow, things like that. This came out at a time where everyone was trying to be Sam Raimi's Spider-Man. That was a massive success, and everyone was trying to copy it. This took the opening narration that Sam Raimi's Spider-Man movie started, you know, the whole, you know, who am I, you sure you want to know? It's like they watched that and said, how can we make that worse? Because Daredevil took that as well and did it terribly, where we're going to have our main characters just speak in platitudes and philosophical bullshit and use that to frame the events of this movie. It's going to bookend. I hate that trend so much, and I'm so glad it's one of the things that has, to quote Thanos, been snapped out of existence, because I hate it so much. It works in comics, but a lot of times narration in superhero movies, I'm going to complain about this in a movie we're talking about very soon, although who knows by the time we actually get to The Batman, but it's not something I've really been upholden to as a fan that I've liked.
Adam, you had a very violent reaction when I said that. What was your reaction about?
Oh, I literally got stabbed beyond my notepad when it did this. And the day I died was the day I started to live. If it wasn't for this retrospective, I would have turned the fucking movie off right then and there, two minutes in, and I would have been out. This is Patience Phillips, and she's fucking tried my patience already. Jesus Christ, I hate this. Oh,
well,
fuck.
She should have died another day.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
She is, but she's a jinx. You know, she always comes back.
Yeah, like, all right, by the way, everybody, with the amount of puns that are in this movie, are we sure Akiva Goldsman did not ghostwrite this?
So despite playing a character who dies, this is gearing up to be a positive, superheroic experience.
Question mark? I feel like the Riddler riddled me this. What is this movie? I don't know.
We actually start off on, not on her possum superhero abilities, but on her ordinary life, where she was supposed to be an artist by now, but it's actually a practical version of her main artistic standards. She's running past huge billboards of Sharon Stone to land right into her new job of designing ads for face cream. Her co-worker Sally is having a sample of the new cream, which is getting ready to hit the market, which Patience refuses, and we cut to a meeting where Sharon Stone says they have decided to choose a new face of their company, Adrena. Sharon Stone, let's talk about her a little bit. This is a woman who, she has had like three careers.
Yeah.
She started off in the 80s, she was kind of the bimbo who was always in the background, like Action Jackson and Above the Law. And those types of films. And then Paul Verhoeven remembered her after he put her in Total Recall. And so 2 years later, after every major actress turned down the role, Sharon Stone gears up and she gets the role in Basic Instinct, which is a movie I loved at the time. You try watching it now, it's not actually that good of a movie if you really dissect it. And so she had that career as like kind of a sex siren. And Adam remembers, I was on a big Sharon Stone kick for many, many years.
Oh, yeah.
And then she gets a lot of respect when she does Casino with De Niro, and she tried winning an Oscar for a while. And this was The Last Stand. She had this. She had Basic Instinct 2 a couple years later, and that was it. She was done. Like, I don't know what she's been doing since. I think there are times in this movie where she knows what movie she's in, but then there are times when she's playing the super serious villainess, which we'll find out. She is the main brains behind the scheme in this movie. And she's trying to be the scary villainess that the script is saying that she is. I don't know. What do you guys think about Sharon Stone in this movie?
Look, here's my comparison. I would say that her best days, much like the character, were behind her by this point. I think she should have won the Oscar for Casino. I think it's honestly a crime. I think it's a crime she didn't win. But unfortunately, that was her peak, and she made some choices afterwards that kind of derailed her career. But she's done some good work recently. She had a fun role in The Disaster Artist. She's had some good TV appearances. And I remember she showed up on Law & Order SVU in an episode. She won an Emmy for that. I just saw her in something really recently. So I know she's still working, which is good. But you're right that Total Recall sort of set her off on the sexy femme fatale role. It was a trilogy. It was Total Recall, Basic Instinct, and Sliver. Then you had garbage like The Specialist. But yeah, as far as her being in this movie, you could have cast anybody and had them give this performance. There's times where she reminds me of Uma Thurman, where she's cognizant of the type of movie that this is, which is garbage. But there's other times where she plays it so serious to the point where it doesn't seem like anyone else is in on the joke. And this, to me, much like some of the Batman movies we talked about, everyone's in a different movie. There's no consistent through line with all the acting performances, which is why it feels so... You can tell this was a movie that sat in development hell for a long time, and I kind of wish I could have pushed this director out the window because, oh my God, I forgot how many CGI landscape shots they do of just sprinting through the city and the CG buildings. This movie is so over-directed. And it under-delivers in its direction at the same time.
Let's talk about the director, Pitoff. Now, who is Pitoff? Well, he's a guy I do know. And the reason why I do know him is because I got the huge, massive, and people who remember me from the binge days remember, I'm a huge Alien fan. And on that Alien set, he is one of the big visual effects artists on Alien Resurrection. So he was a visual effects director. He was a second unit director. How he ended up with this gig, I have no idea. But he's another one who, I don't know. People think Tim Burton didn't read any comics. I don't think this guy read one. And he is a Frenchman, and I think he set off to make some kind of French sex movie. Because, let's face it, that's what this is. This isn't a superhero movie. This is about a woman who gets redemption from cats and is all of a sudden like this huge sex pot that is shaking her ass at the camera. And, my God, there is a cut of this movie where there's a hell of a lot more of that. And this guy had no idea what the hell he was making, but I gotta say, it's kind of funny to see. And he didn't have much of a career after this. I think he did a couple TV things, and I think he ran off to France, and we haven't really heard from him since. You're absolutely right. It is over-directed, but there are times when I really just can't take my eyes off this.
I thought Pitoff was, you know, that name was on here because Alan Smithy wasn't even willing to have his name on this piece of shit. Visual effects. It had to be because there was no one else in town willing to take the gig. There's no fucking other reason. And he's gone off to do nothing ever since. Going back to Sharon Stone, though, I think she's about the only thing worth watching in this movie. And I'm not saying that she's fantastic, but if you're going to watch one thing and there's one thing worth watching, it's Sharon Stone. Because Matt says she's, you know, inconsistent, but at least there's times where she's having fun in this play. Did they get Sharon Stone because it's Sharon Stone? Or did they literally want to do the... Haha, Sharon Stone. Guess what? She turns into fucking stone by the end of the movie. Waka, waka, waka. Shit. So halfway through, I was taken that if they would have cast her back in the X-Men movies when they were first starting it, or maybe if they did a couple years earlier where she was doing Diabolique and some of those, she would have been at least a worthy Emma Frost in her prime. I think Sharon Stone would have been a good way to go. You know, I've met her once in person at a San Francisco Zoo. Pleasant person. She was married to, I can't remember his name, that ran the SF Examiner here at the time. Very delightful person, beautiful in person, charming smile. I'm a fan of, you know, most of her work. Like Matt, I think she was robbed in Casino, much like Casino was. But of anything in this movie, if you're going to get an older actress to play that role, she kind of fits, you know, as well as anybody you would have got around that time. So of all the issues I have with this movie, and you can count them on all four of my paws, Sharon Stone is not one of them.
it's a really weird performance when I look at this movie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you don't have a consistent performance from anybody from credit to credit in this, except maybe Alex Borenstein. Maybe she's the only one that pulls off a straight performance.
We're then seeing patients going to the office of the power couple, and George says that her designs for the new ad just disappoint him, and he does not reward incompetence. And he's telling her to get a pedicure while she's at it. And Laurel, Sharon Stone's character, begs him to give her a chance to fix it. And he does give her a chance. He says, tomorrow at midnight, you better have this ready. Let's talk about this storyline. Mm. An artist at a ad agency for face cream. Huh?
Well, I guess they couldn't exactly make her a secretary for Max Schreck because they did that already. So next thing that was on the fucking list up on the board in the office, could they try to hem this any closer to what they already did? Oy.
Well, the only thing I thought, I did think of the Joker a little bit, where in that 89 Batman, he was an artist trying to make the perfect woman in that movie. And here, like, we're seeing something of, I'm not sure exactly what we're seeing, but it's just like she's trying to be an artist, but she's making ads for this agency, and she's just like, well, I failed as an artist. Honey, you're in your early 30s. Like, you can still be an artist, you know.
But it never matters. We don't go back to a flat. At the end of it, she's not making amazing art. She doesn't have a cat. You know, it doesn't play any matter in this movie whatsoever. None.
Her profession, like a lot of things in this movie, is irrelevant in the grand design. In addition, the patient's character pre-Catwoman is everything I hate about the way certain characters are depicted in movies, where they're these easily stepped over, they have no backbone, they're nebbish to a fault, but yet there's some guy who just inexplicably falls in love with them for reasons just because it's Halle Berry, not because they have personality or a compelling character. For a movie about female empowerment, God, this movie is sexist in so many ways. The way that Alex Borstein is just horny to a fault, that is her character.
Mm-hmm.
She is Dr. Love from that Kiss song, cranked up to 11. So I guess you get a Kiss and Spinal Tap merge there. Wink, wink, not much. This is more cartoonish than anything Bruce Timm and his team have ever put together. I forgot the Merovingian was in this movie.
Yeah. We're going to be talking about him.
With all the bad CGI and landscapes, I thought this was in The Matrix.
Oh, Jesus.
It's got that same, like, green. There's a lot of green in the exterior shots. The buildings, some of the architecture looks right out of The Matrix. Because they never tell you where this takes place. They don't ever say the words Gotham City.
Nope.
There's no real-life parallel. All you know is the main character and the name of the Hedair beauty line. Those are the only pieces of peripheral knowledge that the movie requires you to have. Because, let's be honest, this movie doesn't require you to think. It just expects you to sit there and watch it and be entertained because we're sheep.
We cut to a party being held at the building across the street from where Patience lives. And when she yells out the window to ask them to turn it down, she doesn't get a response. We'll come back to this storyline later. But she's now working on a new design that she's never done before, as a cat meows from above the building, and she's stuck. She goes out to get it, as she starts taking out blocks of the building like the Joker did at the end of Batman 89. But who should come to her rescue other than Claw and Order's Benjamin Bratt?
Did you write these puns?
I have so many.
Because, I enjoy, at least I do mine off the cuff. When mine are bad, they're at least spontaneous. The fact that you have gone through all this anticipation and all this note-taking is more effort than these writers put into this book.
Now, let's talk about Benjamin Bratt. This guy got famous in the late 90s, early 2000s, not for his work on the TV show, but for being the boyfriend of Julia Roberts. That's literally the only reason a lot of people knew him. And that is the extent of why he should have gotten famous, because when you look up Bland in the dictionary, not only does this picture come up, it unfolds into a poster. He is so awful. Though it does look like he's trying. I mean, come on. We got this in Elektra, too, and we're going to talk about that. You guys don't want to, but we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, Goran Visnjak.
Yeah, when we get to Marvel next year. Goran Visnjak, exactly. This is the guy who comes into the picture, falls in love, like you said, Matt, and has no redemptive qualities whatsoever. He's just here to be the, I don't know, what exactly is he? There is such a vanilla feeling to these characters that I do not get anything from Benjamin Bratt, but I kind of love him in this just because he's trying, but he doesn't know what he's trying to do in this movie. What do you guys think of Benjamin Bratt in this?
All right. Benjamin Bratt reminds me a lot of Dominic West. where his movie career is usually shit. But he's got a pretty good TV background, and he's done some good vocal work. Like, I thought he was great in Coco, played the villain in that. He also voiced Superman, ironically, in one of the animated movies. As far as him in this movie, he's here to be, you know, on the side of good, which you need in this, if you're depicting Catwoman as an anti-hero, I guess, which I don't even know if they do, because they try to cheat that by making Catwoman a split personality, which is really weird. It's basically they confused Catwoman and Two-Face and kind of mixed it with a nice glass of fuck it juice before they started writing. Because the part with the cat where she sees, and you could apply that sentence to 80% of this movie, the part with the cat when it's on the air conditioner and no one else can see this, but yet he still goes up to save her. I guess it just why? I feel like I got dumber watching this movie.
Yep, and I got dumb and dumber watching this movie. Benjamin Bratt has played second fiddle to, what, Holly Berry, Sandra Bullock. He's Captain Bland. Thought we'd get him in a sequel to Doctor Strange, but even they went, nah, fuck it, you're too bland for a Doctor Strange sequel. It's Benjamin Bratt. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I guess Jimmy Schmitz was busy, because he's the only person who gives this absolutely, hey, I'm here and I'm not going to give any type of performance whatsoever type performance. So I guess they call it central casting, because he doesn't detract, really, but he sure doesn't bring anything to the film either.
So Bratt's playing Detective Lone, a member of Claw Enforcement, trying to get her to come off the ledge because, according to him, she's trying to commit suicide, proving that his mind is inferior to others. But he does rescue. There's a lot more, boys. He does rescue her as she falls down and the crowd goes mild. What the fuck is this? This is how they meet. He thinks that she's trying to commit suicide, but she's actually trying to rescue a cat.
Yeah, this is the meet cute in a romantic comedy,
yes.
not superhero movie.
Yep.
And they also, we always talk about how superhero movies will ride the wave. This also reminded me of, there's a scene in The Mask where he sees a body in the water, or one that he thinks is a body, and he pulls out the mask. That's how he gets it. And the cop's like, what the hell are you doing down there? It reminded me a lot of that scene. And I spent this whole movie going, swap out Benjamin Bratt for Jim Carrey, and I kind of would have wanted to see that movie.
So Lone makes his way into her place as she once again chases the cat, and we once again cut to Patience's place of employment, where Lambert Wilson's George tells Sharon Stone's Laurel to not wait up for him or the coddling scientist that they're supposed to meet up with, as Laurel looks jealously at pictures of Adrina.
If you're going to replace Sharon Stone with another model, get one that's hotter. Even if Sharon Stone is 60 when this movie comes out, this replacement model can't match up to Sharon Stone. Oof. You can't even cast a young hot model well in this fucking movie.
She isn't very attractive, is she?
No, she looks like a doorknob.
I have no comment. I'll take your word on it, but I'm sure Stone wasn't 60 when she made it.
Yeah, because she was in her mid to late 30s when she did Basic Instinct, so she was pushing 50, maybe.
About 50.
Yeah, which I guess is kind of allegorical, how she was the new hotness for a while, and she's gotten cast aside by... I'm trying to think who stole her roles.
I don't know. That's a good question.
I don't know. Mia Jovovich? I don't fucking know. Kate Beckinsale.
That's
a good point. Flash the Detective Lone coming in to see Patience at her job, and he flips through her work, and he seems to admire it, thinking that it's possum. He then...
I want to beer at the wall right now. I'm going to... If this is your idea of getting karma on me for the last 10 years of me making bad jokes, I'm sorry.
He then asks her to coffee, to which she agrees, and Sally says that she'll help her get ready by having her wear the leather outfits that she got her for her birthday, to which Patience says that she will never wear that leather outfit. Sure you won't, Patience. You happen to have a leather outfit just laying around.
This is where I gotta complain about gay stereotypes. Her gay friend. Not Alex Borstein, the guy.
Okay.
That guy is so offensively gay that Harvey Fierstein would walk over and go, honey, come over here for a sec. I understand that you think a lot of us gay guys talk like that, but for the love of God, you are taking this too far, and I'm going to throw you out the window like Michelle Pfeiffer, so cut this shit out. Like, I could not believe, like, he's wearing a floral shirt. He's, man, sandwich. Like, I'm sitting here, and this movie is almost 20 years old, and I was offended.
Let's take a few minutes to talk about Barry here. She is not good, and I'm not sure she realizes what movie she is doing. In fact, she was better purring in the few seconds she does in The Last Boy Scout than anything she does here, just 2 years after winning her Academy Award. If I call for Tommy Lee Jones to have his statue revoked after his god-awful Joker impression in Batman Forever, this one should have turned hers into a scratching post. I mean, she is so bad in this movie, but there are times when I love seeing her. Like when she's putting catnip all over herself, and I get the feeling that Halle Berry had a litter box in her house, and that's how she prepared to be Catwoman in this movie. There are times when I love how deep she goes into it, because I think Pedoff just, he didn't know what he was making, so he's just like, you know, yeah, do that. Be like a cat. Be like a cat, you know? It's kind of funny to see Berry here. What do you guys think of her in this movie?
Oof. You know what? If they went one way with it, great. If she was that, I don't know, freaking mouse-chasing crazy the whole time, I think I'd go with it. It's just so inconsistent, and so, I mean, when she's this dowdy artist, it's not enjoyable whatsoever, but when she's Catwoman, it's still all over the place. She can't get in a lane. That brings up her being, you know, then later on, you know, when she's the Two-Face type, where she's fucking psychotic, she has a break, she doesn't even know she's these two characters. It makes no fucking sense. So I can't even enjoy her because she's so inconsistent. Her performance goes every different option. It's like Pitoff was like, okay, go ahead, let's do another take, do it completely differently. And then when they edited the movie, they took every different fucking take and just stitched them all together because nothing matches up.
Was Pitoff an alias for Tommy Wiseau? Because that was like, whatever, say the words as I wrote them. let's be honest. Halle Berry's not a good actress. I hate to say it. One role does not define your career.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can take one performance, which I think she's very good in Monsters Ball. You can argue if she should have won the Oscar. But you look at her big movies, like you remove X-Men, the movies where she is the lead. This, Gothica, what was that Bruce Willis one? Perfect Stranger?
Forgot about that one.
More turkeys than my great-grandmother on Thanksgiving because she kept burning them multiple times. I guess she picks her scripts by dartboard because sometimes, you know, she'll get a good script. Like, you know, I thought she was used effectively in the Kingsman sequel that she was in. I thought she was good in the John Wick movie she was in. I want to say it was the third
one.
Oh,
yeah, that was the third one. Yep. Yeah, she was really good in that.
Yeah, I enjoyed her in that. But I sort of think she's on the same level as Keanu Reeves. That's why. But let's be honest, you could have put you could have put Viola Davis in this role, and it would have been a disaster. Because no one knew how to write it, no one knew how to portray it, and you have a director who really seemed like he was in over his head, and I think it's very evident when you read both the production history and just watch his choices that so much of this was everyone treading water and ultimately drowning because they didn't get any direction.
Am I the only person in the world that enjoyed Gothica? I think I might be.
You know, I haven't seen it since it came out. I remember kind of liking it when it was out, but I haven't seen it since it was out.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either.
She was in a good one. You know what? You know what she was in that I liked? She was in a movie called The Call that came out a few years ago. I actually kind of dug that one.
That was pretty good. She was great in Dorothy Dandridge. Like,
yeah,
she
was good in that.
She has ability, but I think it has gone out the window, and I think it's... And I'll say it, I think it's gone out her nose, you know, because I do think she had a lot of troubles in Hollywood. Swordfish, I think, is fun as all hell. And I think if she was playing this up in an enjoyable, comic booky way, like Swordfish is a comic book movie. It really is. If she played this like that, I think it'd be a much better watch. But she's not. It's just so all over the place.
We cut to the scientist giving his side of the cream side effects, as we are seeing pictures of decrepit faces. And as the scientist asks to have the plug pulled on the cream, patience walks right into a set of dishes and has her presence given away. She's chased for a bit as she hides and is shot at, and the music being played here is the type of sensory overload I can't stand. It's a lazy way to get your pulse up here. I mean, Pitoff goes to this a lot. If you want an action scene here, just pump up the music, pump up the music, pump up the music, and then we're running through scenery, and pump up the music, pump up the music. Oh, there's a gunshot here. Oh, pump up the music. It's really sensory overload.
Yeah, and I also understand you have I know Halle Berry is mixed race, I believe. She identifies as black. Did you have to overdo the R&B as much as you do? that feels like pandering to a certain demographic in the worst ilk. Because even in the opening credits, where it's like Egyptian music, there's still a woman vocalizing. Like,
yeah, oh yeah,
she might as well be fucking Mary J. Blige, who honestly might have been a better Catwoman in this movie than Halle Berry. Yeah, it would have been a real family affair, but.
They seal her in, and as she's running through the sewer, it picks the worst time to turn on, and she's blown out right into the water. But this proves to be a fortunate place to land for patients as we get one of the best reanimated sequences I have ever seen. Stuart Gordon is envious of how they bring patients back here. A bunch of CGI cats come up with choirs playing in the background and literally breathe new life into her, making patients come back to life. And I just love the look of triumph on the cat's faces while she wakes up and her eye turns into a cat's eye. I'm sorry, I fucking love this so much for the wrong reasons.
Well, the cats give a more dynamic performance than Halle does. So, this to me felt like a very direct pot shot at Batman Returns, where she gets pushed out of an exterior, falls a remarkable height, and is resurrected by cats. That outline is nearly identical. And these cats don't bite her or scratch like they do Michelle Pfeiffer. They basically... I don't know what the word... She basically, like, the cat is Spock and mind melds with her. Which, fuck, get Shatner in this movie. It's already that much of an embarrassment. Why not just add him? Ugh, it's hysterical. There are parts of this movie that are hysterically funny. And there is one that I have written down in my notes that I had to leave the room. I was laughing so hard. This almost did, but I get that they're embracing the inherent silliness of comic books. But they're doing it with something that does not have this level of absurdity. So it just makes it all the more ridiculous. Like, why did they feel the need to overcompensate this much?
Yeah. God, this hurts. Even the city that there's, I don't know why it's up so high, dozens of feet up in the air on this island, but these big exhaust ports just pump the fluid out into the open water whenever the fuck they feel like it. But there's this random island she somehow got to and then gets meowth to meowth by this cat to breathe new life into her. That was great. That eye shot I thought was kind of cool. That's a cool little shot. I like that. Way to go. I also saw the trailer. But my note when this happens is, fuck you, Tim Burton, because this was done because Tim Burton decided that Catwoman could be resurrected by magic cats. And you know what? Magic cat fucking works on stage, and as it was shown frickin' by Fuzzy Buttholes 3 years ago on screen, it doesn't work on fucking the big screen.
Not only do we have CGI cats, but... I have a theory that this takes place in Manhattan, and it's the rejuvenating power of toxic waste that brought her back, the same way that they've turned Jason Voorhees back to his boy self.
And the Toxic Avenger. That's what she is.
Is there any reason given for why the cats choose her?
She was around.
She's a cat woman, we're about to learn.
I'm just imagining Pitoff thinking he has made the ultimate empowering female statement and then just getting blown away with how this movie was received. Like,
He thinks he's making a female empowerment movie to get blown all right. That's exactly what he thinks he's doing.
So Patience is back as she's more stunned to the world around her than ever. She's seeing bugs move around below her. Birds coming closer than normal, and she then literally jumps back into her apartment.
They're stealing from Sam Raimi's Spider-Man movie at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
From the moment she wakes up, I hate... You have to come up with a better way for your superhero to be fumbling through their powers. It works for Peter Parker because he's a high school kid, and his hormones are probably all over the place, so his powers would be magnified. Can we come up with something other than a montage, for fuck's sake? I have this problem with Daredevil, too, where it's like, oh, he's blind now. What's he going to do? Oh, we're going to have him hit a speed bag with some 2000s alternative music playing. Just swap out alternative for hip-hop, and it's the same goddamn movie.
Patience punches her way in and is not kidding around as she sees what she is and sleeping in demure white. She's automatically clean as her phone rings, and Tom Lone calls... Sad that he was stood up by Patience, and it's obvious that they aren't on the path to get meowed.
Oh my fucking god. Can I be euthanized right now?
She checks the tag. Why the hell didn't she do this to begin with? and we get a swooping shot of buildings before we cut to the home of Ophelia Powers at midnight.
Oh, this isn't the house from Up?
At midnight.
And this is what Ellie did before she died of cancer, which is the second most painful thing that happened in her life.
And Midnight is welcomed with open arms, as she is the rarest of breeds, a temple cat.
No, she's a Russian blue. I've had a couple of them. They're beautiful.
All right, so here's the ultimate damnation for this movie. By doing this reveal that she is like the next in line of a generation of Catwoman, you have immediately sapped all the individuality from Selina Kyle,
yep.
Which is very important because Catwoman came out at a time, she originated in Batman number one, which was 1940.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception of Wonder Woman, there were not a lot of prominent DC characters that were women, and B, that were written as well as she was over so long. She has a very niched place and a very important place, not just in DC, but in the history of comics. And instead, they stripped all of that away and came up with a Star Wars-esque prophecy of descending. She might as well be a fucking Green Lantern with the way they explain it, where it's like every sector needs a Catwoman, or every time period. Just, I think this is the moment where I turn on this movie completely and just say, you have undone your pants and just shit all over Bill Finger's grave, which Bob Kane, I'm sure, did at some point in his life before he also died.
Adam, what are you feeling at this point, the big fan of the series?
I'm hitting the timer to see if it's fucking an hour and a half later already and I can turn this thing off. Fuck, nope, it's only 30 minutes in. God damn it. To me, I'm literally trying to figure out how and why they called this thing Catwoman. Because there's just no rhyme or reason, you know, for this to be attached in any way to DC Comics, to Gotham, to Batman. There is nothing about this. Like, I got cat scratch fever just wanting to get this thing over with. And this hurts. This entire idea, and this is why I'm convinced that they did not write this as a Catwoman script. Because, oh, fuck, this hurts right here. A different movie? Sure, fine, whatever, I don't give a fuck. But this is bad. This is so, so bad.
Ophelia says that the cats have taken a Rataclaw liking to her, and as Patience tries to leave, she is drawn into the catnip. And if you want to laugh, just do a search on YouTube for Halle Berry and catnip. It is worth going out of your way on your sure-to-be-busy day and catch up with this scene. I love this scene so much.
GIFs on the internet should be created for just this right here of watching Halle Berry roll a fucking catnip ball around her face. Now, if the whole thing was this, I could enjoy it at least in a silly way. You know, because when she throws it, she's rubbing her face against it like a fucking cat does. It's, oh my God. Like,
it's so great.
I get it. You're missing the bump. But, oh my God. It's, the whole thing's not this way. And that's the bad part.
Yeah. If you had made this just an outright screwball comedy, you know, if you made this Liar Liar, speaking of Jim Carrey, where she's hexed and doesn't know how to control it, or you made it a parody of the Hulk, which I think you could have done. Because it's kind of like she's got a dark side like the Hulk does. You could have gotten a lot of mileage out of these scenes. But because the movie, it's as beige in tone as that skin cream, there's no consistency of enjoyment, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is as bland vanilla as the coffee Benjamin Bat drinks.
Which we never see, but I'm sure he drinks it black. Black as midnight. To match that cat, which if there was someone who was going to win an Oscar, it's this cat. Because look, cats are assholes, and the way that they just look at her, like, you're going to move, you're going to get off my couch, or what? That's the most genuine and authentic reaction in this entire fucking movie.
So we cut to George, who is mighty upset. Patience doesn't have the designs yet because she cannot remember. He makes fun of her incompetence, and after she apologizes for every second she wasted working for an untalented fellow such as him. She leaves, and the room goes wild with applause.
After she gives the remix, we get, oh, fuck.
Remix, yes.
Let's remix that. How did they get away with that? Oh, in 2004, what exec didn't go, yeah, how about we cut that line, yo?
I guess they thought Will Smith was in this movie, which is normally how that shit flew around this time.
But this
they also... They stole the scene also from The Mask when he tells off his boss, the bank teller.
Uh-huh.
I fucking hate this movie.
This is a lot of The Mask, but without the comedy, the intentional comedy elements of it.
Yeah.
you know, but as Matt brought up, she is suddenly giving the two-faced performance we never got out of Tommy Lee Jones. It's like, you know, the split personality comes out of nowhere, and it's very unexplained.
The next scene is her leaving with her stuff in hand and then hissing at a dog as it passes by. Yes, I said hisses at a dog. This is just hysterical to me. I'm sorry. Sally goes to the doctor and asks her about that detective, and Patience responds with, "I don't think it's going to work out." We cut to Detective Lone giving a seminar for some elementary school students, giving them a positive look at law enforcement, and after denying them the privilege of seeing his gun, he excuses them and then walks up to Patience, who has coffee with an apology written on it. They talk for a bit, and she says that her friend Sally tells her that she's a little fun deficient. And
that's the message statement for this movie.
All right, let's talk basketball.
Mm.
We then cut to the kids begging Lone and Patience to have a game, which they do. And my god damn the kitty litter all to hell if this isn't one of the most infamous and hilarious scenes in the history of film. She's proving to be more cathletic than him as she's climbing walls. She's predicting all that he's going to do. She's bouncing the ball while distracting him with her assets. This scene is fucking glorious. I'm sorry. It is so awesome. You guys are such fucking Debbie Downers in this movie, and I'm looking at this as, my god, this is just fun to me. It is so off-the-wall stupid, but my god, these people are thinking they are making a female-empowering movie, and I'm just imagining the camp that is going on without them even realizing it, and that's what's making it fun for me. And Matt, you start with this because you mentioned last week, you gave a tease how much this scene changed your love of basketball.
Remember, I live in Boston, which has a very celebratory and accomplished history in the National Basketball Association. And this movie makes me want to bitch slap Larry Bird square in his face. Look, it's like they watched Daredevil and said, how can we take that terrible park scene?
Yes.
And make it 10 times worse. Mission accomplished, motherfuckers.
I'm at a loss for words, which I don't think has ever happened on the show. Like, it's one of those scenes that you just watch. And you sit there as a moviegoer, even if you are not a critic or someone who looks at film in a discussion-based or an analytic base, you just sit there and go, who wrote this? And what right-minded editor would say, oh yeah, this is very important character development. It is essential we have this scene in the movie. So somebody was asleep behind the wheel, and somebody probably OD'd on tuna that was overloaded with mercury and died when they started shooting.
We're going to get tuna later.
This scene is so bad, Ron Artest jumped into the crowd and punched somebody over it. This scene is so bad, Michael Jordan quit basketball for 2 years and joined the fucking Chicago White Sox over it. That's how bad this... First of all, I'll be the one to defend Daredevil when we get to that movie, just as a heads up. There's, what, one shot made in this fucking scene of her grinding up against Benjamin Brown?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
The first one to make a free throw wins. It's not even a game.
And the kids cheering on like it's a fight, 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 while she's fucking acting like she's in heat.
Mm-hmm.
With these fucking middle schoolers here on the playground. Oh my god. I had heard about this scene. I had never seen it before. Never seen a clip. And wow. Just wow.
We cut to Laurel, who is looking through pictures and is then told George is going to be at the factory all day, to which she responds, he hasn't said anything meaningful since he said I do. Perhaps there's trouble in paradise, boys. We cut to... I can't believe I'm going to say this. We cut to Patience...
Oh, now is the point where you start playing.
We cut to Patience eating cat food.
She ate tuna. Then again, I will eat tuna out of a can as well.
Yeah, we do too. And her phone rings and Sally is asking for details on their date. And Sally gets angry when she hears that Patience beat him one-on-one. That's not good to do to a guy. Sally tells her to be herself next time. And then she tells the doctor that she might have a fever. And then Patience, she makes her way to her neighbor's door, kicks it down, and leaps on the bar before spraying the speakers and turning the music off, yelling for them to keep it down. And by the way, this is also where she gets her whip.
This scene is so bad, it made me dislike Venom even more in comparison, being that they ripped it off for that fucking movie.
Yeah, I think this is worse. Oh. I think these are the kind of superhero movies that Sony watched and said, oh, we can do this too.
Like, they didn't watch any of the good ones. They watched the, speaking of cat food, they ate the table scraps. And to quote the Oregon Trail, they probably died of dysentery. This was, I could not believe this was the genesis for the whip. I could not.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
I could not fathom or recollect that this was how it originated. It's a fucking beer line.
Extends and shrinks based on necessity the rest of this film.
Yeah, and in my case, you know, it doesn't move because Halle Berry and leather just, you know, my beer line just stays.
On draft with good head.
Yeah, there's no, like, look, Benjamin Bratt, sure, I guess he's good looking, but there's nothing here for me as a gay man.
She should. I should think she's hot as all hell, but this outfit, and then when she does, what she does to her hair,
yeah,
it's not a sexy look. I mean, the outfit could look nice, but the way that it works with her, no. Okay, yes, the CG-assisted fucking hip wiggle, okay, it's a sexy catwalk. Aha, catwalk. But it's not nearly as sexy as they think it is.
So Patience has finally gathered the confidence necessary to bring out the black leather, and she cuts it into something she can accessorize before driving away on a motorcycle that I didn't even know that she had.
It wasn't hers.
Oh.
You hear someone say, hey, that's my bike.
Oh, yeah, okay.
She stole his bike.
Yeah.
The neighbor.
He stole that pizza. I thought, for sure... Because this movie is so absurd, I thought Midnight the Cat drove that motorcycle to her. That's how he tested her. Which, to be honest, if that happened, that would not crack the realms. That would not be the Indiana Jones in the Fridge moment for this movie, where you're like, oh, what the hell?
Toons is the driving cat. I would yes. be all in for that. I will say, it seemed like, once again, they were like, how are we going to throw back to what we had before? Oh, give her some scissors and have her cut up her outfit, which is exactly what we got from... So, again, fuck you, Tim Burton, part two.
Chekhov's leather outfit.
Oh, my.
We didn't see a museum being burglarized, and wouldn't you know it, there's Patience saying that it is a perfect idea to steal all that's in there. And if this isn't one of the funniest and bizarrely put-together action scenes, I'm not sure what is. The close-ups of her crawling on all fours on the wall and then taking them out one by one is something of terrible gloriousness that I actually fully endorse.
Oh, my God. This is Tomb Raider, which did almost this exact same scene in the mansion. But without any kind of quality or decent stunt work or editing or camera movement whatsoever. Oh my God, this is... this hurt.
Isn't it amazing that right before this movie, we watched Dr. Octopus and Spider-Man have a very compelling fight scene on a train that, even though we know it's CG-assisted, it fully immerses you in the phonetics of how Spider... Like a comic, how you imagine these characters would move. Here, they let the computer do all the talking. And if that computer could speak, it would say, please kill me now. It would demand that MacReady pours whiskey into it just to put it out of its misery. I don't understand the Potoff's insistence on having her do victory laps around the exteriors of this wall, combined with all the quick cuts. This movie has more quick cuts than a teenage goth chick who just got rejected by her boyfriend.
In the 10 years we've been doing this, you've never used that line, really?
But I got to bring my A material when you give me, I don't know what level of quality this movie is, a Z?
Patience is waking up during the day to find a ring and, of course, cupcakes. She then Googles cat cults and basically everything that has to do with cats, and then comes across an old picture of Midnight. Isn't this odd?
Which is funny, because when I Googled pussy cults here, I got invited to the Power Exchange in San Francisco.
Your firewall destroyed your computer.
There you go. Sorry,
this
Laura.
This reminded me of that scene in this Mass Superhero movie. And that part in The Ring where Naomi Watts is looking for the lighthouse.
Yep.
And she's using, like, the fact she's not even using, like, Yahoo or Google. She's using some, like, fifth-level search engine. This shit might as well be a period piece.
Patience goes back to Ophelia, who says she knew she was going to come back. We're hearing more about the cats around the place. And Ophelia says she died and was reborn, and she was worthy of the gift given to her. She then pushes her off the ledge, but Patience is able to position herself in order to catch herself. And this is when we are given a history of what being a catwoman is like.
Expo,
I take it none of this is in the comics, boys.
Fucking no. Okay. Which we're told, though.
If this was in the comics, I wouldn't be reading this shit.
We're told, though, that Patience is dead. She died. Like, Patience doesn't exist anymore. And it's crazy.
Sewell. Yeah.
That doesn't really play out other than a line in here, but Patience is gone. She's this resurrected Catwoman.
And also, this is where the script, which I know I'm gonna talk shit about the screenwriters, big shock. It's really strange how she can remember her entire past life. She knows her identity. She knows her best friend. She knows where she works. But she doesn't remember dying. And it's not explained. It's not explained. Why is there an amnesiac? Because Batman's a detective, she has to do detective work that a five-year-old autistic kid could probably do with 5 minutes in a coloring book?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. Ophelia says that she can be free, as freedom is power. And now Patience is on a mission to find out who killed her and why. We cut to the true sign of female empowerment, an ass shot, as Patience walks away in her leather outfit. She jumps down and all across a bunch of CGI buildings before sliding down. And Matt, you have a point when you say there are so many goddamn establishing shots here, but we're not told it's Gotham. So, I mean, is this Chicago?
I don't think we're ever given a name.
No.
It's never said. There's never a title card. There's never a subhead. Why would the fucking Ninja Turtles could live in this? I'd rather see them, to be perfectly honest. Like, the Ninja Turtles, if this was a TMNT Catwoman crossover, I'd just say, fuck it. I'd throw my hands up and be like, all right, Warner Brothers, you win. I don't care anymore. The movie has no forward momentum. It is paced like you're hiking with an 80-year-old who has a prosthetic leg and a crutch that is too short for him. It is sluggish to get through this.
I don't know, man. I'm having a pretty good time, but for the wrong reasons. I'm not saying that this is anything worth putting on in the superhero marathon or anything. So Patience goes to the guy who pulled the trigger and follows him to a bar where she asks for a white Russian without the alcohol.
I was doing the opposite. Screw the milk, just give me straight vodka.
So cream.
And these shots of the dancers, then her dancing the night away, these are all just giving me an aneurysm.
This is the one scene Pete Toth read that allowed him to sign on to this movie. This was it. Me get dancing club with girls. Oof, me in.
Well, if they're executing, you might as well be fucking...
he's Russian now.
Soviet Russia movie directs you.
And you know what's weird? It's like we've all heard the stories of actresses like Halle Berry. I mean, this woman had just won a fucking Oscar. Like, she can't tell this guy one time, you know what, I'm not going to do that. She's going with it, which is the weird part of this whole thing. She takes a whip and then swings across the bar before hitting the guy who shot her and knocking him outside. And Pete Toth's way of shooting this fight makes me laugh so hard because the guy's missing punches. And he admits that they told him to flush the pipes because someone heard something they weren't supposed to hear, and that George is covering it up. But these punches that are being missed. Remember, Matt, and we haven't covered Sherlock Holmes. I don't know if we ever will. But there are scenes like that in that movie where we're seeing, like, Guy Ritchie's filming Sherlock Holmes in this fight that and the guy's just missing punches, and we get close-ups of these punches just going right by. I hate when directors do that shit.
Yeah, well, it's also from Sam Raimi's Spider-Man when he's fighting Flash.
But that's Spider-Sense, though. That's different.
Yeah, I'm just saying. There was precedent they were aping. I also realized this is the guy from The Crow that's fighting.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, killed Brandon Lee by accident.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, you mentioned The Crow. Isn't that what they're kind of going for here? I mean, the previews to this movie, I don't know if you guys watched the trailers for this, but it's literally the Crow monologue, and she just puts Cat in instead of Crow.
Yeah, well, it's also the idea of being resurrected, being I could see the parallels. The only difference is the Crow is actually good. But yeah, this back alley fight, and her whip is also unrealistically strong, because she hurls him halfway across this alley, and she does not possess superhuman strength, at least to our audience. I don't know if that was in the fine print when she signed the contract.
Patience knocks him out with an uppercut I haven't seen in boxing in ages, and then goes to the building where she's caught, so she uses those cat-like reflexes and jumps out. And just like that, we cut to Patience going to see Sally, who says Patience just looks fabulous, including the hair, which Adam hates so much. And we're seeing a news report of a woman in a cat suit causing havoc. Sally then complains of more headaches, and Patience warns her of the cream and begs her to stop using it because she can guarantee that that is what's making her sick.
This makes her an idiot, by the way, because it's like, I know the cream's bad, and I know that I was fired, I can't put two and two together that the Hedairs had me killed. Oh, my God, this movie makes you so angry. Oh, my God. Makes you realize when you go back and watch something like Tank Girl, which came out like 10 years before this.
Mm-hmm.
Women had it better then than they did with this. Like, between this and Elektra, that's the kiss of death for female-led superhero movies for the longest of time. It was good reason.
Yeah. We're going to get to Tank Girl.
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah. Oh, my God. I love Tank Girl.
Yeah, there are things about that movie I love, too. Meanwhile,
See, I feel about Tank Girl the way you feel about this, where I love it, but for the wrong reasons.
Yep.
From the director of Freddy's Dead. Meanwhile, we apparently need to catch up to boring Tom Lone, as he's still working on the Slavicky homicide case. He then asks a weird question pertaining to whether or not his partner's wife would risk her life to save a cat. To which his partner says, maybe, if the cat was carrying a pizza. People actually wrote these lines, people. An actor said them.
And a director said, cut, on to the next scene.
Yeah.
There's at least three instances where they could have stopped, but they kept going.
Yep.
Cut, print, looks good, moving on.
Yeah, exactly.
Ed would make this, speaking of Tim Burton.
Ed wouldn't make this, that's how bad it is.
Oh, boy, nicely done, sir. Lone makes the sorry connection of the two written versions of the word. What a detective this guy is.
That's not the dumbest part. The dumbest part is the forensics, the handwriting expert, who can tell, oh, this person's lonely because of how they wrote their O. Like, what kind of hippie bullshit is that? I'm pretty sure they don't teach that in any forensics class or psych evaluation. What reject lint trap book of shadows bullshit is this?
This is clearly two different people. No shit, it's fucking Harvey Dent.
Clark Kent is Superman because of the glasses. I never would have guessed.
We cut to another date between the two as Patience is once again beating him, this time at bottle toppling. And this is where Lone starts asking Patience about the homicide. Patience says that George isn't exactly the nicest guy around.
Yeah, way to partially indict yourselves and give up a possible motive.
But Lone swears that she's not a suspect, and they get stuck on a Ferris wheel, and gosh golly, wouldn't you know it, the wheel's about to collapse. But here's Patience to save the day as Lone is bumbling, and she leaps out and rescues a kid.
This is the most authentic scene in this movie, because if you've ever been to one of these very small carnivals that look like they were put together overnight, it's surprisingly realistic that one of these rides would go haywire. Yeah. So I give them points for authenticity.
Looks like my county fair.
It really does look like the Antioch County.
Yes, it does. You know what's crazy, though? This gets done. He goes down to do his part. She saves somebody. This entire thing's about to go on, or about to come down and, you know, kill the tens of people that are on it. What happens after all that? The fair just fucking goes on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not go home or bring in the engineers to do a thorough investigation. Just keep going. Like, and I'm pretty sure people got on the Ferris wheel 5 minutes after they left to get their money's worth.
The camera pans up and everybody just goes about what they were doing.
And Matt, how many times have we seen this? I mean, we talk about it in the slasher series, like Child's Play and Texas Chainsaw. Yeah,
Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, there's that kid who won't move during the festival. Yeah, they love putting kids in danger. Like, this reminded me of in Superman 2 where the kid's dangling off Niagara Falls. This is a trope that they put in a lot of superhero movies where it's amazing that there's any kids left because they're all apparently dumb as a bag of hammers or a trio of screenwriters that wrote this movie. Take your pick.
We'll get to Superman next year. She turns.
Well, technically, we're going to get to it in a couple of recordings.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. Patience turns down his offer for dinner tonight as there is something that she needs to take care of. She makes her way to Lauren's house, who attacks her with a golf club. A cat fight ensues, and she tells Lauren that her husband is using Baleen as a disease in a jar. She takes Lauren's phone and leaves once she gets the information of where George is. She leaps.
Where's the trigger?
She leaps up, and we are seeing George tell Adrina not to think and to consider it a condition of their relationship.
I'm pretty sure that's a John Peters quote.
Yeah, probably. And then Patience cuts his face with her newly done nails and accuses him of covering up Baleen while being pursued by cops. Question, why would this guy, or we're going to find out it's going to be Lauren later, but why would they cover up Baleen and what would they have to gain from a bunch of chicks having rock faces?
Copyright infringement from Ben Grimm.
it's not like this company is hard up. They seem to be successful as all hell. So if you have a problem with this and you know it early, which they would have known it early, why didn't they pivot? Just because? Convenience?
Yeah, and it's also clearly not a company that has a track record of controversy because they can get their products out very quickly. I appreciate the mentality of we need to do some kind of commentary on the model, on, you know, eternal youth. Like, speaking of Catwoman, this might as well be a Poison Ivy villain scheme, which I think she actually used at some point. But this opera scene, somewhere Mark Forster was like, I'm going to put this in Quantum of Solace. I'm going to put an opera scene in or Mission Impossible. That's all I can think of. And I don't know why the Merovingian is with this obvious side chick, because she's also, he tells her, don't think.
Yeah.
But why are you with her when the public knows that you're married?
Like, yeah.
The tabloids will be all over you.
And, of course, we'll find out later that he's not the real paw perpetrator. Catwoman fights with Detective Lone, who says that he's taken, as she causes Sparks to get away. This fight between these two is just so funny to me. Like, they're trying so hard to get this stupid detective in the story, and it's terrible. Meanwhile, George is visited by Laurel, who tells George to be a man for once as he hits her face and hurts his hand, meaning that she's now a rock lady.
She's a stone. She's a Sharon Stone.
Yeah.
Clearly these writers had no basic instinct in being intelligent, because this script deserves a total recall.
Nice. Patience is bummed because she thinks Lone does not like the real her, and they go out on a date as she goes to town on a plate of sushi. Again, how can you guys not laugh at Halle Berry?
Oh, I laugh at this. But,
this is great.
Because I've been on dates where I've seen people do this. And also, you know, sushi is one of the great things you can eat a lot of when you're drunk.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Last week, the kids were off camping. Wife and I had the house to ourselves, went out and got some sushi. So after having some private time with some sushi, I think I ate it the exact same way that she did. So this part didn't bother me at all.
I thought you were going to say Laura did it like this.
No, this is me with a plate of niggity, without a doubt.
Patience asks if he likes bad girls, and he responds, only if they like him back. God, this guy sucks so bad.
I could be so bad. Didn't she have that line in another movie? Yeah, that's her in Die Another Day.
Yeah. Patience then says that she's not a real artist, as she got a job at an advertising agency and has kind of lost herself. And she's about to tell him that she's Catwoman when it starts raining and she loses interest in that portion of the story and just has sex with him instead.
Is that because cats don't like the rain? Because they don't like getting wet?
Yeah.
That's exactly what they're saying, yes.
I mean, I'm sure wet pussy isn't very good, but...
I beg to differ, sir.
Yeah, so would I. Lone finds one of her nails, and at this point, something about her seems pawfully familiar as he grabs a glass to take it into evidence and then leaves a note for her. He finally does some detective work as he's narrowing down the lip marks on the glass to whoever is Catwoman.
Oh, my God.
As Patience is talking to Laurel, who reveals herself to be the real villain of the piece.
It's the Austin! This is the equivalent of a wrestling swerve. Not badly. Like, we all saw this coming.
Yeah, exactly. I do love how Laurel offers her a can of tuna, though. That was pretty funny. I laughed at that. And then frames Patience for the murder of her husband.
What were they going to do? Are we smoking?
Oh, jeez. Nice callback, sir.
So literally, she was too quick. She was not. She was too quick to I'm drunk as shit. Trying to do a joke. She wasn't quick enough to dodge the gun, and the guy was dead. So yeah.
Quick in the dead.
Yeah. I want to go to a casino and just bust everyone and hold on my hands for the next 30 minutes, because I wanted this movie to fucking end. Like, I had that freaking time display at the bottom of HBO Max. I kept looking at it every 2 minutes by the
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, fuck, there's another 30 minutes. Oh, fuck, there's another 5 minutes.
So your Vince McMahon comes out when you're watching movies like Catwoman, huh?
I don't know, because I haven't been asked to step down due to any allegations.
Oh, okay. All right. So Lone tells Patience that he's sorry as he takes her in for questioning. She pleads her case, but Lone is not buying it, until she makes a statement that she is not a woman looking to jump to her death, and that she's the same girl that he was with last night, as we get another ass shot while she's led to jail.
Yeah, because nothing screams female empowerment more than over-sexualizing their anatomy.
Yep, she then hisses at a guard who tells her to be a nice kitty. Midnight, the cat arrives in her cell to be the rescuer as she tells him that Lassie would have brought her a key, but she just fits her way right through the bars and then does some flips as she jumps out the window and has her ass bumped by a car. Because we need another ass shot in this movie. In the other cut, there's a lot more of this. So this was actually tempered down, believe it or not.
The cat, when Midnight showed up, was actually going to talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
You were going to get, like, I don't know, James Earl Jones to voice it, where it gives her like a pep talk. I felt like the god was going to talk to her at some point, because they make reference to her all the time.
Yeah,
but I guess that was a step that's where they drew the line.
Exactly. Why stop there? Adam, how are you at this point? Are you like Matt? Are you just like kind of watching the clock as this thing's going?
I'm angry. I'm irritable. I'm pissed that this thing exists. Like, I'm not having a good time. I'm really not. Like, I can't even enjoy it with the, oh, this is stupid fun. Like, maybe I should have been drunk or take shots every time. No, if I take shots every time something stupid happened, I'd be dead.
You'd be dead.
Yep. But I can't have even the fun out of realizing how bad this is.
We're seeing the Baleen launch get visited by Detective Lone as Catwoman stops the delivery of the product by destroying an assembly line of trucks. Lone is casting doubt on Laurel's story that Catwoman took George out and says that he knows it's her as she shoots him and is about to do so again before Catwoman rescues him. He then tells her that he's sorry for not trusting her, and this is one of many scenes that are just very poorly staged as guys are being taken out and we have no idea where we are at any point in time. Like, Pitoff just has no idea how to shoot an action scene. Honest to God. This guy was in visual effects, but he wasn't in action. Like, these are just terrible, terrible shots.
Yeah, it's like they set it up without any sort of pre-vis or work of how the camera was going to flow it around. Either that or when the editor got it, I can't imagine what that editor's life was like trying to chop and put this piece of shit together. But yeah, I agree. From blocking to staging to everything else, it's just piss poor.
Yeah, the only blocking I saw at this point was a cinder block next to my TV that I was going to throw it towards.
Patience and Laurel are having their knockdown drag out that the movie's been moving toward for 90 minutes as Laurel proves to be a formidable opponent. She kicks Catwoman's ass and calls her a scared little girl playing dress-up, but instead of flying out the window, Patience says it's overtime and keeps the fight going. Cool. Laurel is now hanging off a building, and Patience tells her to give her her hand, but instead the Laurel dummy falls and does about 20 flips before falling to her death.
This is the scene I'm talking about that made me laugh.
This is great. Before
I leave the room. I have not seen a dummy this bad since The Fugitive.
It's really, really bad.
It's like that, because I miss really bad dummies. Because we talked about this on the end of Nightmare on Elm Street when the doll gets pulled through the door.
Mm-hmm.
The Fugitive, and my favorite is Death Wish 3, which has all very bad effects. Who knows, we'll cover that series down the line if I have my way. But this dummy is so fucking, like... They don't hide that it's a dummy.
No.
Like, they don't even CGI body. It is an actual weighted dummy, which makes it all the more humorous. Like, this is to me is the funniest scene in the movie. Unintentional or not, it's hysterical.
It's amazing. I saw fucking at Disneyland Spider-Man's new animatronic crash into the wall, and it looks fucking just like this. Matt clearly saw the exact same video.
I saw that video, and it's fucking Spider-Man, the robot swinging on a web, and he goes, "Karen, airbags, please," and he falls through the roof of the other side of the building.
That's fantastic. We cut to a newspaper saying that Catwoman has toppled... Oh, I'm sorry. Before I get to that, why didn't this woman shatter when she fell on the floor like a stone? Like,
that's what I thought was going to happen. That would have been a cool shot.
Yeah. But no, we get this dummy just flipping. We cut to a newspaper saying that Catwoman has toppled the Empire and saved countless lives as Sally is enjoying strawberries with somebody who looks like he belonged in one of those ads, but not on screen.
Yeah, well, all the love scenes look like they were shot for a L'Oreal commercial.
Absolutely, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
as Ophelia, she gets a card of thanks and sends Brat a letter that he has probably gotten a lot while trying to get good roles, which says that he's a good man, but just not good enough for her. We then get a final monologue that sometimes she's good, but an untamed life is what she's been given to live, as she cracks the whip and walks towards the moonlight as credits have mercifully rolled on Catwoman. Matt, this may rival Lady in the Water as far as how much fun I've had doing a podcast, but let's get our scores out of the way. On a scale of 1 to 10, what do we give Catwoman? I like to get the anger out of the way first, so Adam, you go ahead and go, sir.
I'm the most angry. Okay. Oh, holy shit. Yeah, Lady in the Water, how about Village? Because it came out the same year as that piece of shit, too. This movie, it got greenlit by somebody, and I don't know why. You know what makes me, what I resent most about this movie? Is that I did not see Batman Begins 1 year later because of this film. Think about that. This movie came out only a year before Batman Begins. And that movie lost untold millions of dollars because of this piece of fucking litter droppings. Everything in this movie doesn't work, from its casting, other than Sharon Stone. I think Sharon Stone's fine in this movie. She's the high point, that being what it is. But the acting, the script, the staging, the stunt work, the outfit, the hair. When the woman who plays Lois on Family Guy is the second best thing in your movie, you got a bad fucking movie. Halle Berry was at supposedly the height of her sexiness when this movie came out. And there's no sex appeal in this movie, even from her. Benjamin Bratt is more vanilla than vanilla ice cream. I mean, he is bland as could possibly be. I can't believe he keeps continuing to get work over and over. I think the only thing I've enjoyed, he's in DMZ with Rosario Dawson. Decent miniseries. Other than that, I mean, man, he's a drag. They disrespect the Catwoman character. They disrespect everybody who's ever worked on it in comics, who's ever written, who's ever drawn, colored, inked Selina Kyle. And that pisses me off huge as a comic book fan, as the Catwoman fan. Earlier today, I was reading Catwoman Solo by Tim Sale, amazing artist who just passed away suddenly. And there is amazing storytelling out there possible for Catwoman, and they still have failed to do so solo. Catwoman Win in Rome by Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale. I mean, there's great stuff that's out there. Selena's Big Score, if you want to be campy and have fun. But they can't figure it out because they didn't know what they wanted this to be. It's not Catwoman because it's not Selina Kyle. So whatever Van Helsing-type Egyptian fucking sequel they wanted to make this into, it fails on every single level. This movie had to use all nine of its lives to possibly get onto screen, because I don't know how they didn't just cancel that. So if this movie was a 10, it used nine lives to get through my patience, because I lost my patience with this fucking movie. So I'm going to take all those nine lives away, and I'm going to leave this with a fucking 1.
1 out of 10 for Mr. Bunch. Goudreau, where do you stand on Catwoman?
This kitty's just roadkill that's been left to bake in the sun too long. I thought the advertising for this movie, they should have called it This Summer's Biggest Hairball. When Garfield comes out the same year as this, and it is a better cat movie than this, certainly a more dignified one, you have made an astonishingly bad movie. More importantly, you made an astonishingly bad movie that I cannot enjoy on the so bad it's good level, because this is one of those times where I think this was not a movie made with sincerity. This was a movie made with ample confusion. There was no roadmap, and there was no link to what came before outside of name recognition. Halle Berry said the movie's about being empowered and being okay in your own skin. There should be a way you could tell that story without being so just debasing in your performance and with the way, I mean, look at the final scene. She's walking away, and all you see is her ass walking towards the other side of the camera. It fails on everything it's trying to do. As a spinoff, something where it's entirely different is abysmal. As a representation of a character that has a very strong following, it is heresy, I would say to a lot of people. Like, I would love to see, if this movie came out now, Petoff would have to be in witness protection, because there would be so many DC fans showing up to his house, ready to beat the shit out of him. This would be like, This to me is why I get so mad at people, and I know, Adam, we're going to have this fight sometime. When I get so mad at people who are so upset that, oh, they changed the Mandarin.
Mm-hmm.
This to me is what people think that is. This is witchcraft. This is garbage. It is a waste of my time outside of recording this actual review. But despite what you may think and all I have said, I'm not going to give this a zero. I reserve that for basically Lady in the Water, Leatherface, and the Shining miniseries, which I think I was far angrier on those shows. Here, I'm upset, but I knew that going back to this movie for the second time, the roadmap is already there, and I just drove it off the cliff like the end of Thelma and Louise. Just hand in arm with Christian watching this with me. God bless him. He didn't walk out. And we just crashed into a fiery heap below, which is a great allegory also for the box office returns on this movie. So I'm going to land on a 2 out of 10. I am twice as high on this movie as Adam is, and I still fucking hate it.
Gave it double my score. Cat, damn you.
You guys need to stop being such sour pusses. I have a score written down here, and I'm going to justify it by what I'm about to say. To me, there are two different types of bad movies. There are bad movies that are just terrible, and you just want to turn it off immediately. And there are bad movies that you watch and you just have a good time with because you realize that the camp that is being portrayed on screen is not what they thought they were making. I think there are times Sharon Stone does realize what she's making. But everybody else, Halle Berry included, think they're making the biggest female empowering superhero movie. Just the result of this is just hysterical to me. We had moments of camp in Batman Returns. Hell, Michelle Pfeiffer bathed herself in that movie. But for the most part, we did not laugh at that performance. Here, her performance is so easy to laugh at. This is not a clawful experience, boys. To me, there are bad movies that I hate watching. A great example of that is last week's movie, Batman and Robin, was a terrible experience for me. I struggled to get through that movie. Everything you guys are saying about the runtime on that movie, I did the exact same thing on that movie. Here, I had a fun experience watching this fail on every level. Now, this is not Catatouille. This is not a movie that you can sit and say, oh, I know exactly what they were going for here. I'm not sitting here and saying this is a good movie. This is not a good movie. This is a terrible movie. You're looking for a good superhero experience. There's plenty of Marvel out there. Hell, Thor is getting ready to be released as we record this. It's not a good superhero movie. But to me, you know what? There is so much to like about it because of how bad it is. And it's one of those movies I cannot turn off. I have seen it about 3 times. And there will be probably be a time when me and Jen will probably have more shots. And we'll probably watch it again. 8 on 10 for me. Fun time. All right. That doesn't
I fucking told you. When Garrett listens to the outtakes, he's going to understand this in-joke. I called it.
I'm telling you, I had a fucking fun time watching this because of how bad it is. I can't take my fucking eyes off it. I think it's worth just sitting down with a couple beers and having a good time with this and not looking at it with a critical eye, which we do, you know, but I was unable to do that with this. From frame one, I could not take my eyes off this, and I enjoyed it. What can I say?
Yeah, I can't take my eyes off a car accident on the side of I-90.
Well, that's exactly what this is. It is a car accident of a movie. Pitoff never worked in film again after this. It is a disaster on monumental levels. Don't get me wrong.
I also don't say that just because Halle Berry's in it, but...
I couldn't take my eyes off, but I risked getting toxoplasmosis so just so I didn't have to look at it again.
After this catastrophic podcast, boys, what do you say we kind of take a break from the Batman universe and get into the Predator universe? Yes, we are going to be doing a set of shows leading up to Prey, the new Hulu-released Predator movie. And
Hulu-exclusive.
Hulu-exclusive. Now, in order to prepare for this, if you go back and you listen to the Alien series I did, as part of that series, I had the 2 AVP movies all set for those guys to watch. Guess what? They didn't finish them, and that podcast is, again, of me talking about and reviewing a movie that my 2 cohorts just couldn't get through. In order to prepare for this, we are going to review those movies proper, and we're going to watch both AVP movies. If you want to hear the rest of the Alien reviews, you can go ahead and go to Binge Media. They have the rest of the Predator stuff. But the 2 boys I have here are going to be reviewing those 2 movies. Now, what is your guys' anticipation for Prey?
I'm pretty excited. This is, to me, the Predator sequel I want, where it's not different time period. We're not really doing a lot of wink-wink callbacks to the original, or any of the sequels for that matter. They shot it exclusively in, like, Comanche. I thought the director choice, Dan Trachtenberg, I think is how you say it, did a movie called 10 Cloverfield Lane that I love. And this seems relatively small scale. With that said, August is kind of a tough month, and I don't have a Hulu subscription, so I don't know what their track record is for movies, but I'm very anticipatory when it comes to Prey. As far as AVP, fuck no. Again, much like Catwoman, this is one of those things where I hate the completionist side of this, but I've also not seen either of them since whenever Prometheus came out, so it's been almost probably over 10 years at this point. Maybe my opinions have changed, but also came out in 2004, was the first EVP, much in line with Catwoman. So it's like poetry, it all rhymes. So we'll be in for some good discussions. And I am curious to go back and watch them, because they're on my Blu-ray shelf. I just don't. With Predator, I only watch the first one with any regularity. And with Alien, I have a different perspective. And it's probably going to get me a lot of shit when we go in depth on our next show.
Adam?
Growing up, The Predator was like my favorite movie character that exists. I fucking loved it. I thought that was the coolest looking thing that existed. From the time I was 10 or 11, I had a life-size Predator poster on my door from Predator 2. It was like well in advance of that movie. So it was life-sized. It like broke down all of his weapons that he had on him, a description of what they all were. And I remember my father taking me to see Predator 2 on its release day, which was on my birthday, which was a don't tell your mom we're seeing this kind of movie. I've seen Predator more times than I could count. Predator 2, yeah. You know what? I'll defend it as an enjoyable bad movie. Predators, I enjoy quite a bit. I thought it really tried to do something at least a little bit different there. The Predator that just came out, though, I can't watch. I have tried 5 times to get through that movie, and I can't get through it. And that being my last take with, you know, what I think is an awesome character makes me a little worried about this one. So we'll see. Disney bought it from Fox. You know, it came as part of the deal. And them just dumping it on Hulu as opposed to trying to make any money out of it, it has me worried a little bit. But as Matt said, I like the time frame. I think it's the Spanish Native American War that's going on at the time. So it's an interesting set that they're going to do for it. Going into the AVP movies, interested and ready to discuss it. Aliens vs. Predator was, I think, my very first comic book I ever bought off the rack when I was a little kid with my paper route money. And I still have those 4 issues bagged and boarded here in a box some, 30 years later. So the comic series having nothing to do with the movie whatsoever. We could discuss that when that comes up, if there was any ties whatsoever. But that's how long I've been a fan of really waiting to see those two awesome titans, you know, go to the screen. I loved fucking Alien. I loved fucking the Predator. So seeing them on the screen for the first time together battling it out was just destined to be awesome. Like Batman versus Superman. What could go wrong?
I thought you were going to say you still have that same paper route.
All right. But no worries. We will get back to the Bat Universe in due time.
I think the next one we're doing is Batman v Superman.
Yep. And we'll talk about the reasons why in that time. But for now, we're going to end this, and we're going to go to Predator next week. But, boys, this has been a very interesting, would be too weird a word to describe what this podcast was.
This podcast is longer than the movie.
And there was more thought put into it.
Considerably. The jokes written by Garrett, as bad as they were, took more thought than anything written on screen in fucking Catwoman.
So, I worked really hard on that plot summary, guys. All right, till next week when we talk AVP. Podcasts come when they feel like it, not when they're told. Thank you, guys.
Good night, meow.
I'm telling you, Slavicki had evidence that Beoline was toxic. That's why Laurel killed him. George found out, and she killed him too. She was covering it up.
And ballistics show the same weapon killed both men. The gun that was in your hand.
Catwoman's hand.
What's the difference?
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively on Percolated Media.
I love this part.
Join us next week for an entirely new review.
And it's a real beauty. Very cute.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, Adam, and Nathan.
That's who's under there.
Edited by Garrett.
When did you grow a conscience?
Voiceovers by Adam.
Who did feel good?
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is for review and discussion, and all clips, music, and audio cues are used as such.
I'm sorry. I'm forgetting my manners. Can I offer you something? A can of tuna, saucer of milk.
You should come back anytime. I'm always here. Oops. My bad.
This was my second time watching it, and probably going to be my last time, to be perfectly honest. And this is one of those recordings where being partnered with someone who is a completionist is it's a burden, but it's also a gift, much like the cat powers that she receives in this movie. I'm done.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I got you. Garrett, did you cut out? Oh, shit, I think he's gone. Yep.
Yeah, there he goes.
Well, all right. Thanks, everybody. It's been a spirited discussion. That's all we have to say on this piece of shit.
Yeah, I mean, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to this, which is very likely going to wind up being revealed, I don't think any of us are going to say anything tremendous positive about this movie. And if we do, if it comes from Garrett, I'm logging off this call early and we're having a sit-down conversation.
That's what I needed was this to go longer.
Yeah, this... If you want to know what an hour and 45 minutes feels like when you're not doing anything, this is the this movie will literally test your patience.
Oh, yes, it will.
And could you imagine if they made this movie now?
I can't fucking believe this came out a year before Batman Begins.
Yeah, and this came out the same year as Spider-Man 2. That's like the most baffling thing, is that we had arguably the most critically lauded superhero movie of all time and the most derided.
Okay, I can't. Hey, there he is.
I got it. My Skype just all of a sudden just crashed. I don't know why.
Skype's been buggy lately.
Yeah, it really has. All right, Goudreau. I cut off right when you said this is one of those recordings, so go ahead, repeat that line again.
Oops, my bad.
Let's get Ashley Judd, since Michelle Pfeiffer's not going to play with us anymore. We're going to get Ashley Judd here. And Ashley Judd, she was a woman of the moment. She was doing a lot of stupid thrillers with Morgan Freeman around that time. At first she was going to go, and she's like, no, I'm done. Then they looked at Nicole Kidman, and Nicole Kidman backed out relatively quick. So what did we get in return? This is what we get eventually. Yes, I did give the numbers, Adam, at the beginning of the podcast. So stop playing producer here.
Sorry, I was wondering if I completely blinked for a minute. I'm sorry.
No, I did.
He just turned into John Peters for 2 seconds.
Add my fucking spider, goddammit.
Oops, my bad.
We are then seeing Demure. Oh God, I can't talk
Demorne,
tonight.
Huh?
We are okay. I'm not even gonna say it. We're then seeing Patience.
Oops, my bad.
As far as him in this movie, his character is here to be the Batman stand-in because he's somewhat on the side of Law and Order because he's a, oh God, poor choice of words. Fuck. Yeah, he wasn't Law and Order. God fucking damn it. I hate myself like Halle Berry when she signed the contract. But you're...
Oops. My bad.
Comic booky way. Like, Swordfish is a comic book movie. It really is. If she played this like that, I think it'd be a much better watch. But she's not. It's just so all over the place.
I still haven't seen Swordfish, believe it or not.
Totally fun.
Yeah, and she's naked, if you enjoy that.
Oh, yeah, there is
that. If you're me, you get to watch John Travolta just reprise his role from Broken Arrow.
Hey, you also get a you get Hugh Jackman standing there in nothing but a towel hitting golf balls.
Yeah, that's true, and that came out around like the same time as the first X-Men movie, where it's like, oh god, this guy's not going to have a career.
Young Hugh Jackman. We cut to the scientist.
Oops, my bad.
And she does not possess superhuman strength, at least to our audience. I don't know if that was in the fine print when she signed the contract.
Adam.
Yeah. Hello?
You took me aback by that. I thought you were going to have a little bit of a little bit of a retort, but nope. Is it? Yeah. All right. Moving on.
Sure.
Patience. That's why he's been my partner for so long, people.
Oops. My bad.
Yeah, well, it's also the idea of being resurrected.
Mm-hmm.
I could see the parallels. The only difference is the Crow is actually good. I like the Crow a lot. I'd love to do that series someday, although I've never seen the direct-to-video sequels. So,
well, there's a new
careful
one
what you ask for.
One day.
Yeah, take that for what you will, although if you made me watch this, I mean, what's the worst that could happen? Says the guy who's offering me 24 night shift movies or whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say, we have Children of the Corn coming up, sir. So.
But yeah, this back alley fight is...
Oops, my bad.
We apparently need to catch up to boring Tom Lone as he's still working on the Slavically put together homicide case. Or I'm sorry, the Slavicky, the guy who died. He's still working on the Slavicky homicide case.
Oops, my bad.
And of course, we'll find out later that he's not the real paw perpetrator. Thank you, Jen. Somebody liked that one.
If you get a golf clubs, I will give you a golf clap.
Oops, my bad.
Lone finds one of her nails, and at this point, something about her seems pawfully familiar. Thank you, Jen.
I'm glad someone finds it.
How drunk is Jen right now?
We've had a couple shots.
Okay. Yeah. She's too drunk, and I'm not drunk enough. For the record, this will probably be the most downloaded podcast of the
year. Yes.
Podcast. The site. But...
This podcast is so glorious.
Oops. My bad.
Predator 2.
Yeah.
You know what? I'll defend it as an enjoyable bad movie. Sorry, hang on. We're not doing Predator movies, right?
No, we're just doing the two
okay.
AVPs.
Okay. Like,
before
I cut my off.
Give your anticipatory.
Yeah. So that, Predators.
Oops. My bad.